index question. This is high-level competitive stuff here. No!
And there is your dagger!
On a blustery Saturday morning, it's cold, it's snowing, it feels like winter. We're here to warm you up. You are in the zone on the fan. Who is with us, baby? Yeah, we'll keep you warm, keep you snuggly, keep you cozy for the next 2 hours. Dave Sinekin, along with my partner, the professor of hoopology, Double T, Trent Tucker, in the house. What's doing, partner?
Good morning, Davey. What's happening?
You managed the snow?
Yeah.
Got here right on time, as usual.
Not too bad, huh? A little light snow falling right now, huh?
Not too bad, but it's coming? First half of October.
Is it coming?
Yeah, it's coming. Yeah, it's going to come all day today.
Yeah, a lot?
Well, I don't think you're going to have to shovel. When's the last time you shoveled your sidewalk?
It's been a while.
Yeah. So you're not... You're not going to have to hire anybody to shovel your sidewalk today. Okay. But it's, you know, who's ready for this, right? Although the scene at TCF Bank Stadium could be kind of fun tonight.
Yeah, it could be.
It's going to be what we like to call football weather.
Yeah.
At the old bank tonight as Nebraska comes to town to face the unbeaten Golden Gophers, one of 16 unbeatens left in college football.
Wow.
Pretty proud of your alma mater, aren't you?
I am.
Everybody joked about, hey, they could start 8-0. They're
knocking on the door.
They are. They're getting closer. That was a solid win last week against the Illini. Nobody really expected the Gophers to struggle too much, but Illinois had some fight in them. They've got some talented players, but Gophers did what they were supposed to do. Here comes Nebraska, and the key question tonight is the health of their two best offensive players. Quarterback Adrian Martinez left the game last week, third quarter, with a knee injury. No idea yet if he's playing, at least that I've heard. And Eden Prairie's own and Chris Spielman's son, J.D. Spielman, their top receiver, has been dealing with injuries all season. And he is also questionable. You got to know he's dying to play tonight, right, in front of all of his friends and family, and trying to make a difference and trying to knock out the Gophers, who last year, as you'll recall, really laid an egg against an 0-6 Nebraska team.
That's gave
up
true.
53 points, and I'd like to think revenge is on their minds, but a win tonight. They have Rutgers and Maryland the next two before Penn State. So, yeah, I mean, things are falling into place for PJ's boat. You're rowing the boat right now,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
You're feeling elite.
Gopher Nation, baby.
Yeah, you're definitely feeling elite. So big night tonight. It's going to be really, really chilly, windy, flurries.
Snowy night.
I like to call it good TV watching weather, is what I like to call it.
Okay.
So we'll talk some Gopher football during the next 2 hours. Lots of NFL as week six is upon us. I think Vikes-Eagles is the most attractive game on the slate tomorrow. Can't wait to dive into that, as well as all the key matchups. And, normally when I sit down on a Saturday, it's obvious what you lead with. There's always a lead story. And today I don't really feel like there's an obvious one, so I kind of want to give the Wolves a little love early because they've actually played a couple games. I didn't get to watch either. I think only the second game was televised, and because it was on NBA TV the same night that the WNBA championship game was played and all the post-game stuff, that by the time they finally switched over, I was probably snoring so loud everybody in my house could hear me from the couch. So I didn't see any of it, but I certainly read plenty about it.
Okay.
And there have been some interesting things to chat about.
Okay, fill me
so
in.
Far. So they lost both their games.
Okay.
To Phoenix and to Golden State.
To Phoenix and Golden State, okay.
They are shooting a whole lot more threes through two games. That's the good news. They're finally kind of catching up to the NBA. They shot 88 threes, Trent, in two games.
88?
88 threes. So that, to give you some perspective, 44% of their field goal attempts were threes as opposed to 28% a year ago.
Okay.
They only shot 19 mid-range jumpers, those Andrew Wiggins specials. And that reflected just 9% of their shots. Last year, 36% of their shots were mid-range shots. So they're trying to catch up with the way the game is being played. The downside of this is nobody on the team can shoot threes.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of an issue if that's what you're trying to
do. That's a concern.
They struggled a bit from deep. Let's get the numbers here. They shot 25%. 22 for 88. That's not good.
Well, the question I have for you, do you see that getting better as the season goes along?
Well, I don't think it can get worse. So, okay. Yes.
Are we going to add any more three-point shooters, or do we believe that the guys who are here now will get better as things move forward?
Where do you go? Do you go to the nearest CVS and go down the aisle for three-point shooters?
They have
say,
to, yeah.
Grab one of those. I mean, they're not, you know, hanging out on the street saying, you know, sign me. Cat was has been five for 13. Jared Culver, 4 for 10. He's been our best shooter. Well, actually, Jeff Teague, 3 for 5,
okay.
60%. But I think you have to feel like it will get better. Two preseason games. We're just getting started. We're trying to feel out.
Well, also, the other question becomes, you know, I know that you want to move into this new era of three-point shooting with this team because that's how the NBA's played today. But you have to be careful because your best player is a low post player. He's not somebody that hangs out by the 3-point line. So if you somehow, some way, you know, forget to put him in a position where he can be very successful for you, the team may struggle.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they are going to sample with him, moving him all over the place. You know, being a distributor, he did a lot of passing from the top of the key, I'm told. He found himself in the corner, you know, shooting a three here and there. But yes, obviously he gives you it makes it very difficult to defend when he's in the block for other teams to deal with.
Well, also you're trying to force, you know, the defense to have to collapse on someone. If you don't have, you know, a penetrating point guard who can put constant pressure with his penetration to break down the defense to open up the shooters, you know, you have to have someone on the floor who can command a double team or a triple team, whether it's on the wing or down low. And right now your best guy on the team is Karl Anthony Towns to provide those opportunities for his teammates when he gets double teamed. But if he's floating outside at the 3-point line more times than not, well then you don't have to double team him because he's not putting pressure on the defense. If he's down low consistently, now if he's scoring at a high clip, now the defense has to make a decision. You know, do we go double team or do we leave him in a one-on-one type situation? And if they elect to leave him down there by himself, you know, he's going to put up some big time numbers.
Yeah, I mean, that's all logical. But if your guys can't shoot, you know, you can double team Karl Anthony Towns all day and leave guys wide open. But if they can't shoot, they're not going to.
But if he's outside the 3-point line, he's not going to put up 25, 26 points a night. Because his best game is down low. And then if he's outside, you know, on the perimeter, but then who's going to give you the offensive punch that you're looking for? Who's going to force the defense to have to make a decision on whether they double team or not? Because you don't have another player who can do that.
Maybe it will be Jared Culver, who, by the way, played a lot of point guard these first two games. That might be a place they put him. And again, we talk about today's NBA. You don't have that traditional point guard that we grew up, the quarterback of the offense. That kind of thing is gone by the wayside. But he, in many of the minutes, in many of the rotations, he was bringing the ball up court and distributing and playing that point. That'll be something to watch, the rookie, to see how much they want to put on his plate early. You talked about defense. It has not been great. That's going to be a big subject line for this team. They allowed Phoenix to shoot 50%. They allowed Golden State to shoot not only 52.5%, but 51% from three. Steph Curry had 40 points in a preseason game. Why is he out there scoring? I mean, if you're the Warriors, what do you need Steph Curry
He's getting ready.
Points.
He's getting ready.
That seems a bit superfluous. Other things that stood out to me, Gorgui Dieng did not play coach's decision against Golden State.
Well, they want to play faster.
He may not have a place on this team.
Well, if they want to play faster, for sure, and if they're going to shoot more three-point shots, that means now you have to go to more perimeter-type players. And we all know that Gorgui Dieng is not that.
No, he's not. There'll be certain matchups, big teams. You think of Philly, Utah. I mean, there will be games where you're playing against teams that are huge, and there'll probably be a spot for Gorgui, but so far, not getting much of a look. Naz Reid, the free agent pickup from LSU, against Golden State. Trent, 17 minutes, had 14 points, 11 rebounds, and shot 7 for 14 from the floor. That stood out to me. Giving him some runs, see what he can do. Does he have a place on this roster? Do they send him down to Iowa to start the season? But they gave him some nice run, and he took advantage of it. Culver had 17 points in 26 minutes against Golden State. Jake Layman had 17 points in 17 minutes. So some of the new faces making their presence felt. Wolves return, or I think it's their only appearance at Target Center, will be tomorrow night. They're playing Maccabi Haifa, an Israeli team.
Okay.
7 o'clock, Target Center. And I saw that Robert Covington is out. I don't know if it's his knee. We hope it's not. That's something we're watching closely because that's for me, a very key player on this team as far as looking how deep this team can go, how many games above, 33, 34 wins they can get. They need a healthy Robert Covington. I don't know if it's any, just maintenance, if it's just a precautionary, but I've noticed that he is out for this game. And Jordan Bell has yet to play, dealing with an injury. So the Wolves are off and running, and we'll keep a close eye on them. The NBA is our bread and butter. One other note on preseason action, Trent, from last night. Your guy, Zion Williamson, have you seen what he has done the first two games of his career?
Well, I saw some of the highlights from the Chicago Bulls game, where he went 12 for 13 or something like that.
12 for 13 from the floor. Last night, 9 for 12.
Okay.
So he's 21 for 25 from the floor. He had 26 points in 23 minutes, made his only three in a 128-127 win over Utah, and was doing this against Rudy Gobert. Like, he challenged Gobert inside and handled his business. So it's exciting to see this guy, who I think was measured without shoes at 6'5 or 6'6.
Yeah. I saw some highlights against Chicago, and he never took a shot outside of 2 feet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, he made a three last night.
So, but yeah, it's good for the Pelicans, because, you know, they're going to need someone who can step in and give them, you know, consistent offense now that Anthony Davis has moved on to the Lakers. And if Zion can come in, and I don't think he's going to shoot 75 or 80% throughout the entire regular season, you know, but if he can shoot, you know, 50, 55%, you know, on a regular basis, for sure, that's going to be a huge plus for the Pelicans.
Yeah, promising start for them. They did allow Utah to shoot 59% last night.
But they were down big to Chicago, and then the reserves came back and won that game late.
Is that right?
Yeah. Zion was on the bench at that time.
Ooh.
Yeah. So even though he put up the big-time numbers, his team was down like 15, 16 points when he left the game, and then I think they made a huge run somewhere in the fourth quarter, you know, to catch the Chicago Bulls. But, you know, during preseason, how many of these players will be on the regular season roster? And we all know that once the regular season begins, you know, teams are going to defend you differently.
No doubt.
And they're going to set up, you know, schemes here or there to take you away from your comfort zone, to force you into positions where you have to work a little bit harder to make your offense work. And if he gets off to a good start the first three or four games during the regular season, you know, then he's going to see some different looks on the defensive end.
One thing we know is we'll see a lot of him. The Pelicans got plenty of national TV love this season, as everybody wants to see what Zion can do. So far, it looks like he will be worth the price of admission. We step away for the very first time, just getting started in the zone. We'd love to hear from you. You want to talk some football? I wonder if we'll hear from Jamar today. He failed to call last week, heading into the big Cowboys-Packer game. I wonder if Jamar will make some time today. We will talk plenty of NFL. That'll be the bread and butter today, as there's a lot of great games on the schedule today. None better than Eagles-Vikings. We'll know a lot about both these teams after what happens at U.S. Bank Stadium tomorrow. You want to check in with us via email to the Bradshaw and Brian inbox, booth@KFAN.com, or give us a call, 651-989-5326, or toll-free 800-320-5326. We are in the zone, and we are just getting started on The Fan.
You're in the zone with Dave Sinekin and Trent Tucker on The Fan.
The Fan.
Back with you at 8:20 on a Saturday morning. You're in the zone on the Fan. Tucker and Sinekin hanging out until 10 o'clock, as usual, following us. Fantasy Football Weekly. The boys will be here to give you all the advice you need to get your Week 6 lineups in shape. I believe I saw via Twitter that the Athletic boys are on from noon to 1 today. Russo and Krasinski, noon to 1. That'll be a nice treat. Gopher football with a 6:30 kickoff, I'm guessing pregame somewhere around 4:30 or so. If you're looking for the Wild, you'll find the Wild Nashville game tonight on Cool 108, our sister station. And we'll have Gophers hockey against Colorado College on AM 1130, KTLK. Gophers Nebraska on the Fan, Wild Predators on Cool, and Gopher hockey on AM 1130, a full day of live sports action on the Sports Leader. It's a big day today. It was a big day in this market 30 years ago today.
Okay.
You know what happened 30 years ago today?
I was 29. No.
The Vikings made a trade, and they brought in this guy.
From the eye, here comes Herschel on second and five. Across the 30, 35, 40, at midfield. Herschel breaks away, loses a shoe. 50 yards, the first time he touches it from offense for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, I was there at the Metrodome that day.
He had a big day that day.
He did, if you'll remember. So this was the trade that set up the Cowboys Super Bowl era of the 90s because of all the capital the Vikings gave for Herschel Walker, who, you know, back in the day in the mid-80s out of Georgia was seen as maybe the greatest college football talent ever, some were saying. And, you know, his time in Dallas was, I'd say, spotty. But the Vikings pounced, and he had just been traded like 2 days before the game against the Packers. And there was a lot of doubt whether he'd play, how much he'd play. He took the opening kickoff like past midfield, but it got called back by penalty. And then his very first play, and it was not at the beginning of the game. The Packers had scored, and they weren't very good. Green Bay, this is 1989. And they bring in Herschel. And the very first time Herschel carries the ball, he goes almost 50 yards. He loses his shoe, keeps on running. I was covering the game for KAL-TV, standing in the end zone where he was running away from me. I remember it so well.
You're like, oh, my.
Oh, my. Yeah, this is a different Herschel Walker. And oddly enough, the Packers had just faced Herschel Walker the week before against the Cowboys, and he only rushed for like 44 yards. The Vikings' offensive line was much better, and he ended up with, I wrote it down, 18 carries for 148 yards.
148.
That was probably the highlight of his era with the Vikings.
So what happened from that point on, why he couldn't keep that consistency going?
Injuries, right? I think knee injuries. He just never could stay healthy. It was always bothering him. To remind the millennials listening, here was the trade. Because remember when the trade was first announced, it was they're either going to give up a bunch of players or a bunch of draft picks. It ended up they gave up both. They gave up a bunch of players, including linebacker Jesse Solomon and David Howard, cornerback Isaac Holt, and defensive end Alex Stewart, as well as a first in 90, a second in 90, a sixth in 90, a first in 91, a second in 91, a first in 92, a second in 92, and a third in 92. And some of those were conditional on cutting the players that they brought.
Okay.
It didn't go well for the Vikes, that trade. And what Dallas did was get guys like Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin and their linemen, and they built a dynasty with all the capital.
But they draft well, you know, with those draft picks.
They definitely did.
Yeah. And Troy Aikman's first year, they were 1-15.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And, you know, it's one of those footnotes in Vikings history. The excitement when Herschel was coming here, I mean, it was off the charts. I don't know what to compare it to today. I mean, it would be as if, you know, I mean, I'm not going to go Patrick Mahomes on the bit because that would never happen. But think of a star player who maybe was just not quite hitting his stride, but people believed he still had this incredible future. It was unlike anything we'd ever seen, that large of a trade. 30 years ago today, that trade was made. I thank emailer Anthony for reminding me that was on this date, October 12th, 1989, 30 years ago.
Ah.
It's one of those things when people.
I knew he had a big day on his first day with the Minnesota Vikings, and things kind of fell off from there. But you know, a guy comes in with a big bang, and you're hoping that, you know, this is what we're going to see on a consistent basis. You know, but you know, things went south very quickly for Herschel Walker and the Vikings.
Yeah.
And you just wonder, you know, after that big first day, you know, what happened, you know, for him and this team not to play at their level once again.
Yeah, it never quite lived up to the first moment he wore purple, but that day was electric in the Metrodome, no question. And, you know, Vikings taking down the Packers, which back then, pre-Brett Favre, wasn't, you know, a huge accomplishment, but still the much-hated Packers,
no
right?
Doubt.
So
yeah.
Anytime you beat Green Bay, it's a good thing for Viking fans. So it was a real high moment in purple history, and I never quite got that high again. But, yeah, injuries just sapped him of his explosiveness, the size and the quickness and the speed.
He was great in college, wasn't he?
I remember I was on a spring break trip my senior year with two buddies in Callaway Gardens, Georgia, a golf trip, and he was a senior in high school. And I remember so well sitting at breakfast, and there was a huge two-page spread about Herschel Walker. I'd never heard of him, being the top recruit in the country and all this. And that was my first, you know, just thinking back, that was the first time I really heard about him. And so it kept him in my head. And then, of course, he goes to Georgia and everything else and what potential he had never quite lived up. But there's so many guys that never quite live up to the hype. And Herschel is probably Exhibit A. He had some moments. You know, it's not like he was a total bust, but he never quite became that Hall of Fame running back that everybody presumed he'd be.
Well, in college, he was so much bigger and stronger. You know, it wasn't like he was elusive. He just used his power and his strength, you know, to just...
He was fast, though.
Yeah, he was fast, but, you know, he could use his strength just to run over people. And then he had the speed to run away once he got into the open field. But now you take the next step to get to the next level. All of a sudden, now you just can't run over people, and you just can't run away from them because you're playing against better athletes.
No doubt. So that was 30 years ago. Today, the Vikings do have a pretty good running back. His name's Dalvin Cook. He is going to be tested. The Vikings' run blocking will be tested by an Eagles team. That's the number one run defense in football. Vikes are number two, but the Eagles like to move through the air more than the ground unless they're playing Green Bay. Let's chat some purple. Let's head to Prior Lake and welcome Denny to the program. Denny, you're in the zone. Good morning.
Good morning. I don't know if you remember me, but I called in last week and told you that the Vikings needed to use the play-action pass in order to open up the offense. And the first three plays last week was play-action pass.
There you go. Nice.
The one thing, and I'd like your comments on this.
Have you sent in your resume yet to the Vikings?
No, I thought maybe you might have put a good word in for me or something.
I'll do that, for sure. I got the power, sure.
The one thing I don't understand is we have some really good, not the wide receivers, but the
tight ends.
Yes. And they're non-existent in our playbook. I don't understand that. Now, they did run a couple of screens last week, which they got to continue to keep doing because the Vikings have always had to pass the ball and run the ball. And when you got Dalvin Cook back there, they have to respect that. So I don't know why they're not using their tight ends, but that's the next thing they have to get involved in the offense so that we can be successful. Other than that, I think a lot of things got cleared up last week, and we'll see how it goes this week.
Yeah, agreed. If you could play the Giants 16 times, you'd be a playoff team for sure. You can't get too caught up, I don't think, in one really good performance.
Well, you got to look at this.
They did what they had to do.
But the Giants, you know, they were inside the red zone about three times and couldn't put any points on the board. So, but it's a nice road win for the Vikings indeed. But I would love to see more teams, as the caller just mentioned, especially inside the red zone. You know, put the quarterback under the center.
Yeah.
You know, don't put him in the shotgun situation. And don't empty out the backfield, because once the backfield is empty out, you right then you're telling the defense you have to pass the ball.
Yep.
And you have a short field. You don't have a lot of real estate where you can operate in. But if you put the quarterback under the center, now it opens up the play action. You freeze the linebackers. You can run. You can pass. You keep them off balance. I would love to see more teams do that once they got down inside the red zone.
I'm with you. That's a pet peeve for sure. To the caller's point, I think that is been a head-scratching development on the Vikings offense for a lot of fans, is where is Kyle Rudolph? Where is Irv Smith? You can maybe say with Smith, he's a rookie. He's young. He's still learning the ropes. You don't see a lot of tight ends jump onto the scene. Even T.J. Hockenson, the top 10 pick, who exploded in week one, has been virtually non-existent since then. It is tough because you've got a lot of responsibilities as a tight end. You have to block, and these guys have been called on to block, and the running game has been the focus of this offense, which means that tight end is blocking, and Kyle Rudolph to his credit. Highly compensated, productive tight end in his career, who's on the back end of his career, but did come back. That was a question. Will they bring Rudolph back at the price tag? And they did. He's blocking. He's being a good soldier. He's blocking, and he's not producing the fantasy stats, and he's not a big part of this offense as far as a receiver so far. But I would think that would change a bit. I mean, I think it's a long season, and you know, teams get predictable, and defenses know what you're going to do, so you have to shake things up. Whether that day is tomorrow, maybe, I don't know, but I think he brings up a good point. Where is Rudolph? Where is Irv Smith? You can't just rely on those two receivers when defenses know those guys get, you know, 80, 90% of the targets. You've got to find some other way. So we'll watch and see if the tight ends do become more of a threat in the passing game.
But also, you're hoping that, you know, your offensive coordinator, you know, has the imagination to expand the offense, you know, to bring more players into the mix so that you can have a balance to what you're doing on the offensive end. You know, a lot of guys come in with the game plan, they come in with the system, and it's hard for them to deviate from that to bring more guys new to the party. And as you just mentioned, you know, the Vikings, they have, you know, some quality guys at the tight end position, you know, that could help them on the offensive end. Now it's up to the offensive coordinator to see how he can plug them in.
We'll come back and talk about this game. I think it's such a fascinating game between for these two teams because they've both been kind of up and gotten down. They both came into the season with, I think, Super Bowl aspirations. Certainly the Eagles, they were my pick, and a lot of people's picks do kind of rise above. You find a team that you didn't really expect to be the top team. They had a chance to be that way. The Vikings, you know, in this market, fans thought there was a really good chance. Maybe not as much nationally, but you know, talent-wise, there's a whole lot of talent on the field tomorrow. 2-3-2 teams, and a real good barometer. Last week against the Giants, not a great barometer. That was a get-well game, take-care-of-business game. No Saquon Barkley, rookie quarterback. Different story tomorrow. Let's come back and chat about what makes this game so intriguing. Vikings-Eagles. We'll chat about it next in the Zone.
You're in the Zone on the Fan.
We're back at 8:40, looking out the window here at our St. Louis Park studios.
Some snow flurries, huh?
It's just, are you kidding me, really?
What was it, 3 or 4 days ago, maybe 5 days ago, 75 degrees?
Yeah, I was out watching son Dylan, freshman football, Minnetonka, in shorts, sandals, and I was sweating.
Was that Monday, Tuesday?
That was Monday, I think.
Yeah?
Monday. And now we've got, there's flurries flying out. It's not just a little dusting. There's some snow flying.
Yeah.
On October 12th. That's why we live here, right? Unpredictability.
Was it 91? We had the Halloween snowstorm. Were you here then? Was it 91, maybe?
I was not here then.
I think 30 inches dropped that day or something.
I remember certainly hearing about it. No, I was, I had just moved to Chicago at that time.
I was passing through town on my way back to New York.
During the snowstorm?
Yeah, I got stuck.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. We're going to talk Vikings-Eagles in this segment, but I want to jump on a call first because Pete Minneapolis wants to chat about his maroon and gold, who have a rather large game at TCF Bank Stadium this evening. Good morning, Pete.
Maroon and gold? I'm scarring gray, dude.
Oh, it's that Pete. It's Ohio State Pete. Well, it said college football / Gophers, and I didn't put two and two together.
No, I love the Gophers, too. My dream would be a Gopher Ohio State Big Ten championship game. I'd be happy either way it went.
Who would you root for? What colors would you be wearing in that?
Scarlet and gray. You got to realize I was born here, but I moved to Ohio when I was 8.
Okay.
And then 1964, I moved to Ohio. Well, then 1968 came along, and Ohio State won the national championship, and I was hooked.
Understood.
So then I moved back here when I was 41 and 97. So I've actually been here longer than I was in Ohio, and I spent 4 years in Florida when I was in the Navy. So I'm 63.
Tough to shake it, though, when it hits you that early. So, all right, what do you
have? Well, yeah, and I converted to all the Minnesota teams. Vikings, Wild, Wolves, Twins are my number one team. I mean, but I can't leave my Buckeyes. I just can't.
You all know, right, so what do you got for us today?
They've been too good for me over the years.
I get it.
I just want to talk a little bit, since Ohio State's got a bye week, is Wisconsin is playing its fifth straight game at Camp Randall. How cozy and running up that great record. Against Michigan State, I think this is going to be quite the game. They're favored by 10.5. If I'm in Vegas, I'm taking the points in Sparty.
I'm with you 100%. I am with you 100% on this one. I've thought about this game this week. I think Wisconsin is overhyped a little bit with the competition they have played. The Michigan game, I think, skewed a lot of people. That was a great game. They played well. But Michigan State, my only concern for them today is they came off a rather bruising effort against your club last week. I don't know how they came out of that one health-wise, but they had much stiffer competition. I think they're ready for the Badgers. I think it's a very tight game at Camp Randall today.
I do, too, and I think that then Wisconsin goes to Illinois, and then they come to the Horseshoe. I can't wait to get them out of Camp Randall and face a good ball club. So, yeah, it'll be a good game, and Michigan goes to Illinois. I hope they don't sleepwalk through this one.
Yeah, Illinois is plucky. You got to be careful there.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, have a great day.
Yeah,
guys.
Thanks, Pete.
All
enjoy your bye week with Ohio State. Yeah, I think Michigan State's going to give Wisconsin some problems. I expect the Badgers to pull it out, but yeah, I would take the 10 points for sure if I was in Vegas in that matchup.
Okay.
Another fun game in the Big Ten today is tonight, Penn State at Iowa. That's a fun game.
Yeah,
Penn State's been very good, better than I think a lot of people expected, but it's tough to go into Iowa City on a prime time situation and take down a Hawkeye team. I would think the Hawkeyes can maybe pull the upset tonight, certainly keep it close. I think that's going to be a fun one to watch as well. It's a great day in college football. You got LSU, Florida tonight as well. Oklahoma, Texas to start the day at 11. Yeah, there's a lot of really good matchups. If you're kind of thinking, looking outside and saying, yeah, put a fire on, get a blanket, get the remote control, there's playoff baseball.
And don't move.
We're actually going to see a show in Uptown tonight, so I do have to move tonight. But for those of you that can just sort of stay inside and hunker down, a pretty good day if you want like college football. Meanwhile, Vikings-Eagles tomorrow, 2-3-2 teams. The top two run defenses take the field, not at the same time, obviously. But for the Vikings, this is a game I think they should win, and I think they will win. I think this is a game where, all right, all the distractions, all the inner fighting, whatever you want to call it, was put to rest because they put a nice game together against the Giants, and Kirk Cousins looked like a functioning, high-quality quarterback against a team that's will give you no pass rush and doesn't have a lot of talent outside of maybe Janoris Jenkins on the back end. So Cousins did what I think he needed to do, and he had a very nice day. Now he faces a Philly team he can also have a nice day against, and he should. He's home. He's in perfect conditions. He's facing a team that's set up to stop the run. They're really good up front. But their back end, they're going to be without Ronald Darby and Avanti Maddox, two of their top cornerbacks. They might get Sidney Jones back, but he's sort of been up and down. The young corner out of Washington who had that horrific injury and got off to a slow start as a pro. They are very, very susceptible to the pass. So this is a day where, yes, you still want to feed Dalvin Cook, but you can't expect Cook to put up the same kind of production he had last week against this defense. This is a team that every quarterback has thrown against. I remember when Green Bay was getting the set to play Philly, and I looked up how they had done against passers, and they'd given up like 380 to Case Keenum and 300 yards to all the quarterbacks they played, and then Rodgers threw for over 400. And granted, teams have a hard time running against Philly. But this is a day where at home your offense should be led by Kirk Cousins because that's what the defense gives you. This team does not defend the pass very well. So the key question is, can you protect Kirk Cousins? Because they've got some really, really nice pass rushers. Fletcher Cox up the middle, that's going to be a handful for Garrett Bradbury. Brandon Graham had, I think, 3 sacks last week. They are very good up front. So got to protect Kirk Cousins. If you can, there should be plays to be made downfield.
But also they're playing against a better football team. And, it was a nice win to go on the road to knock off the New York football Giants, to feel good once again about your team. But now you have to step up and play much better because we all know that the Eagles will be a better football challenge, for the Vikings tomorrow.
And history tells us the Eagles tend to play pretty well against the Minnesota Vikings.
And also, the Eagles are fighting to keep themselves in the race in the East as well. You know, with Dallas now losing two in a row, you know, they're right there knocking on the door. They still believe they can win this division. Many people have picked the Eagles to make a long run this season, especially come playoff time. So now they have found themselves right back in the mix. And, you know, as I mentioned, with the Cowboys losing two in a row, so they're going to come out here tomorrow expecting to beat the Vikings.
And I'm really curious to see the other side of the ball, how the Vikings defense handles Carson Wentz, who's been really good. He's back, not home, but there will be a lot of green and gold, I think, at US Bank Stadium. Not Packer fans, but Bison fans who are going to be excited to watch their guy.
For the last time he was here, what happened?
Well, he didn't play, did he?
The Eagles.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Well, last time he was here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Vikings beat him up?
Not Carson Wentz.
I said that's on the Eagles.
The
here.
Eagles, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
What happened?
Vikings won.
Yeah, and time before that, what happened? They won the Super Bowl.
You know? Right. No, there's history between these two franchises for sure, but Carson Wentz has not played in this building, and
right.
So for NDSU fans, it's going to be a chance for them to see their guy. And I'm a big Carson Wentz fan. I think he's a fantastic quarterback. He should not have DeSean Jackson tomorrow. Alshon Jeffrey will play, but he is nowhere near 100%. So the most dangerous weapons are the tight ends. We talk about the Vikings not really using their tight ends. Zach Ertz is a key part of that offense. Dallas Goedert, another kid from the Dakotas who is going to, I think, have a really nice career that they haven't used a ton yet. But he presents difficulties because he's a big, fast tight end as well. So Green Bay did not do a good job covering Zach Ertz. I expect the Vikes to do better. Because they know that as productive as Wentz is, he doesn't have his full complement of receivers tomorrow. Ertz is going to be a guy he relies on. Curious to see how the Vikings defense handles that. Jordan Howard is getting most of the carries for Philly these days. Their rookie Miles Sanders has been a nice change of pace, but no Darren Sproles tomorrow. Another
guy
that
that's the big loss for them.
That is. So no Sproles, no DeSean Jackson. All that Swiss Army productivity that some of those guys give you is off the table, and I think that does ticket closer to the Vikings' favor. I do like the Vikes tomorrow. I think they're going to win this game. And
I'm with you.
You know, Philly falling to 3-3 in that division, not the end of the world because you got two teams that are terrible. Dallas, we don't know what Dallas is because the three teams they've beaten are the Giants, the Redskins, and the Dolphins. They haven't beaten anybody, and they're going to the Jets tomorrow. And even if they beat the Jets with Sam Darnold, that's not going to prove a whole lot either. So I still think Philly is the best team in that division. And should they lose tomorrow and fall to 3-3, they have plenty of time to get back into that division. Whereas if the Vikes lose a home game tomorrow, again, not the end of the world, but everybody's above 500 in this division. And it's going to feel like the end of the world if the Vikes lose a home game to Philly, knowing what's coming up. They have to go to Detroit next week, right? And that's not going to be real easy.
Yeah.
So it's a bigger game for the Vikes because it's a home game. And because of the competitiveness of this division, whereas Philly, you know, again, I saw what Dallas looked like last week. We'll talk about that a little bit next segment. To me, Philly is still the best team in that division, and they can withstand a loss if they play well in losing tomorrow.
Well, also, you want to see Kirk Cousins show some consistency now against some of the better teams as well.
Yep.
It's one thing to get well against the New York Football Giants, you know, but to stay whole against a team like the Philadelphia Eagles will be a great sign for all Viking fans to see.
Yeah, no question. All right, we'll step away at 8:50, come back, and look at beginning hour number two in the zone. Much more NFL news. We'll give our picks on the key games. I'll give my three picks against the spread. I went 3-0 last week. I'm back. And more Gopher conversation as well as they get set for a big game against the Cornhuskers tonight. Hour number two in the zone right after these.
You're in the zone with Trent Tucker and Dave Sinekin on The Fan.
Hour. We are back, 8:57 on a Saturday morning. Trent Tucker, Dave Sinekin, in the zone on the fan. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Lots of NFL conversation. Week 6, interesting matchups on the docket this week. Before we chat NFL, trying to tweet that hit me a while back, TC Head Cheese from Brandon. Yes, how would MJ's game have been in today's game, and would LBJ's game have been the same back in the 80s and 90s? So let's start with Michael, who obviously you played with, good friend, different era, much more physical, three-pointers not as big a deal. Would Michael have worked on his three-point game because it's become such a big thing, or would he just be
for
Michael?
Sure.
I don't remember. I mean, that's not what he's known for, obviously, shooting from distance.
But he had the six against the Portland Trailblazers, and he throws his hands up and says.
Yeah, I was at that game.
Yeah.
I remember that one.
I mean, he could shoot the three, but he wasn't, you know, a consistent three-point shooter. I think, you know, with no hands allowed to touch players in today's game, with his ability to drive the ball to the basket consistently, he averaged over 30 points a game for his career. He might have been close to 40 a night. Because he would have been at the edge of free throw line at least anywhere between 15 and 25 times a night.
Yeah.
Because he was an attacking player. Now, LeBron James, with his talent, could have played in any era.
Yeah, top of my head, when I saw the question, LeBron, to me, fits more easily into the 80s and 90s than Michael fits in today's game. Now, Michael's the greatest ever, and no question he'd adapt. But his game was, you know, he obviously was a great defensive player, but... You know, you never thought of him as a long-distance shooter. He had explosive to the hoop.
He's great mid-range game. He could, you know, a guy not really relying on the three-point shot, you know, to carry him offensively, he was still able to average over 30 points a game when the defense was designed to slow him down on a nightly basis. So if you put him in an era where the defense really can't play the physical style that he was used to playing against, all of a sudden, now he has more driving lanes to get to the basket a lot freer. You know, I believe he would have added at least 10 more points to his scoring average.
You think about the abuse his body took when he played the Pistons or your Knicks. As you say, they are set up to let anybody beat them but Michael Jordan.
Yeah,
if he goes in the lane, you make sure he remembers.
He still scored 30 points.
Right.
Right. I mean, yep. You know, and
in the fourth quarter, he was as devastating.
Right. So if he had more freedom to roam, you know, without the physicality that he saw, you know, 25, 30 years ago, for sure, you know, his offensive production would have gone up.
Yeah, I think so, too. Interesting to think about, you know, plopping players from different eras and not going back to the 60s when the game was nowhere near like it is now as far as the athletic talents of these players. But when you go back 20, 30 years and say, you know, put Isaiah Thomas in today's NBA, another guy who wasn't necessarily known as a long-distance shooter, but an amazing point guard.
Yeah.
Could Isaiah Thomas, not the current Isaiah Thomas, the old Isaiah Thomas.
But your Isaiah Thomas.
My Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
You know, could he be an all-star in today's NBA? I think so.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
But
no doubt about it.
But it was a different era back in the
Well, most
late
of the guys
80s,
who 90s. Were all-stars, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they would be all-stars in today's game as well because they were very good off the dribble. They could play up and down the floor. Put Magic Johnson in today's game. Up and down the floor, you know, ball is going, we're going to shoot the ball within 7 seconds with the way he played. When Magic Johnson would be, for sure, be an, you know, a superstar in today's game as well.
But what would be different is back then, the point guards he played against were all 6'2", 6'3", and now he'd play against a lot more guys closer to his height because it's changed.
But they can't touch him.
Maybe not.
Yeah, you can't touch him. He's still, you know, he'd still be Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
Right.
But it would just be interesting to see, you know, other 6'7", 6'8", point guards at least able to contest maybe a little bit. It'd be fun to watch.
Because I was talking to a young player the other day, and you know, he said he wanted to really work on his outside game to become a better outside shooter. And I was just throwing some names out of some guys who that when I was growing up, you know, that I tried to model my outside shooting game like. And the one name I threw out was Sam Jones. And I said, well, you would never know who Sam Jones is. I said, but I'm going to give you some homework assignment. You know, if you want to Google someone who had a great jump shot back in the 60s who played for the Boston Celtics when the three-point shot was not big. The 24-second shot clock had probably just been put into the game, or the three-point shot was never there. I think in a playoff game or a championship-type game, Sam Jones went out and scored 51 points for the Boston Celtics. I say, so if you really want to, you know, dig into the history, you know, of the NBA and kind of figure out who were some of the great shooters, you know, throughout the history of the game, I said that would be a good homework assignment for you.
Yeah, I love that. That's going back a ways. You know, for me, the name that jumped to me was John McLaughlin as a Bucks fan growing up.
Yeah.
You know, he was the guy that could shoot unlike anybody else around, and he was my favorite as a kid on the Bucks because of that.
Because everybody talked about Bill Russell. They talked about Havlicek. But nobody really talked about Sam Jones.
Yeah.
Sam Jones was a really good basketball player during his time.
I like that you're having kids, you know, use today's technology to learn about, you know, players from way back.
You know, Walt Frazier, you know, how good was Walt Frazier when, you know, Willis Reed got all the attention when he came out, you know, for the first two shots against the Lakers in game number 7. But nobody talks about the performance that Walt Frazier had in that game, you know, against the Lakers. 36 points, 19 assists, something like that.
Mm.
You know, but it was lost, you know, because of a Willis Reed making that entry at the start of the game.
Limping.
Yep.
You know, can he play? His knees are like jelly.
Yeah, but Walt Frazier was the guy. He had to guard Jerry West.
Right.
And for him, you know, to take on Jerry West, Will Chandler, and Gail Goodrich and put up those types of numbers in a Game 7 type situation in Madison Square Garden, that's big time.
Yeah, that's why you play like that, you can get away with the way he dressed back then, right?
And he still dresses the same way, right?
That's his look, man. That's what he's known for. He better. All right, on the subject of comparing up players from different eras, Jose from Minneapolis has checked in. Good morning, Jose.
Hey, do you think in football will be the same? Because I don't think the people in the 70s can play football with these people right now for being fast, the referees, and the things that they used to do that make them great.
Yeah, that's a fair question.
Yeah, that's true.
I appreciate the call, Jose. So, like, what positions are we talking about? Because I would think running backs, I mean, you go back to O.J. Simpson, right? 70s.
He could play today.
Jim Brown. Right. Those guys could play today. I think
Earl Campbell?
Well, for sure, right? I mean, running backs, I think, could play in any era. Even Paul Hornung, you know, back then, or Jim Taylor. But receivers, you know, where the speed is so different now. You know, you look at Lance Allworth was obviously a really productive receiver back in the day.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he would still be very good. But
Fred Biletnikoff.
But the corners, and safeties you're going up against now are so much more athletic. And everyone's faster. The lines are faster. Everything's faster.
Right.
But also, defenders can't touch you now. Those receivers back then got abused going down the field and still.
By Mel Blunt, Lester Hayes.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, Jack Tatum.
Yeah, you want to see Jack Tatum coming at you?
Right. And you come across the middle now? Those guys could headhunt back then.
The speed of the game, I mean, every sport, it's different.
Yeah.
But football is such a different game now. Guys are so much bigger, so much faster. You look at the average offensive line back then, guys were like 250,
mm-hmm.
260. Now they're all over. I mean, the Gophers' offensive line is bigger than the Vikings' line right now. So I think football, I mean, both sports are so different from back from the 70s. But I don't know. I think a lot of those guys could not play. A lot of those linemen couldn't play today.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Some of the quarterbacks just didn't have the speed.
Maybe Lawrence Taylor.
But we're not going.
Right, he wasn't that old, though. He was not going all the way back.
I mean, Lawrence would be great in any era. It's a good question, though, and it does. You know, I think of like a James Lofton with my Packer leanings, who's a Hall of Famer, who was great. But if you look at his numbers, you know, they don't jump out at you like today's numbers because it's a different game. None of those stats
it's a pass happy
right,
league.
Changed
today.
All the rules to make it more fantasy football friendly.
Right.
So yeah, it's
so
it's,
now, you know, the question becomes, you know, have they changed the rules to help the players in today's game because they don't have the same type of fundamentals of talent that they had yesterday?
No, I really don't think that's it. I think there's so much money in the sport now that they don't want the star players hurt. The TV wants to see the star players, and so they.
But most guys didn't get hurt back then. I mean, O.J. Simpson had long careers,
right? But the money wasn't the same.
I mean, but
that's what it all drives the rules changes.
I mean, but you TV look money. At look at the teams who won during that time. I mean, the Green Bay Packers had a long run of championship runs. The Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, but their best players when the game was more physical and. When you came across the middle, like with Josh Starworth and Lynn Swann, they knew that Jack Tatum would be there. But those guys stayed on the field for a large portion of their careers, even with the game being more physical.
Yeah.
So you didn't want to lose those star players, even though the money wasn't as big as it is today. But there's no way that the Pittsburgh Steelers could have won four championships without Lynn Swann and John Stallworth.
That's true, but they also didn't throw the ball 50 times a game. They weren't getting hit as often because the game was so different. I mean, you had Franco Harris and Rocky Blyer. You were moving the ball on the ground. Most of those teams, you know, you thought of them first as run-first teams. That's what the NFL was.
You know, but the Pittsburgh...
The running backs were the stars back then.
But the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Dallas Cowboys 35-31.
Right. And I'm not saying every single game is 17-14, right, a cloud of dust, but offenses were set up where, you know, it was, running was key. The biggest stars in football were running backs back then.
Yeah, I mean, but those championship teams that we are talking about, they had a great balance. They had Hall of Famers at those key positions.
Right.
You know, they had Hall of Famers as running backs. They had maybe a Hall of Fame quarterback. But they had Hall of Famers at the wide receivers positions as well.
No question, Trent. Yeah. But look at, I mean, Terry Bradshaw's stats right now, you would never consider him a Hall of Famer. He didn't throw the ball that much.
I mean, but if you put him in an era where he had to throw the ball 50 times a game, he could have.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We don't know for sure, but maybe. But yeah, but my point is, they didn't throw much that back then.
Right.
Because the rules weren't set up for them to be able to throw it. And football was built as, you know, running the football.
Well, so the question, why I asked that question is I look at, you know, basketball during the 90s as well. When the game was very physical, you know, the superstar players were still putting up big numbers. And they still were winning championships. All of a sudden, you know, when those guys left and the physicality was still there, the guys who came into the game during that time to replace them could not produce the same type of offensive numbers,
right,
because of the physicality. So what did the NBA do? For a few years, they moved the three-point line in. Now they say we're going to go to no hand-checking, no physicality. We're going to take away the hard fouls because we believe now the players who are coming into the leagues fundamentally or talent-wise may not be ready to deal with the type of physicalness that the yesterday players were able to deal with.
Yep, it's constantly evolving in all sports, right, trying to keep up with the...
Because the game was slowing down. He couldn't score.
Right.
You know, the games were in the 50s and 60s. Sometimes you still see some games like that every once in a while.
Correct.
Yeah.
Warren, St. Paul, you're in the zone. Good morning.
What you guys are saying is 100% wrong, because any great player of the old era, the offensive lines of today aren't nearly as good as the old ones were, regardless of what you say. The speed, the guys, there was always speed in the NFL. The fastest guy to ever play in the NFL was Darrell Green, and that was during the early 80s up until the 2000s.
What about Bob Hayes?
Bob Hayes was pretty fast.
Yeah,
he was
faster than Darrell Green.
There's going to be exceptions to every rule, but the game was not played at the speed it is today, Warren. Give me a break.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you take a look at the great defensive linemen back when Eller and those guys played, they were just as fast as any of those guys playing today. The offensive linemen of today aren't even close to the players of yesterday. The running backs of the old days were better. They ran better. They ran harder. And the defensive backs, the great defensive backs of yesterday were better than the ones today, because if you take a guy like Paul Krause, Edmund Tennell, and those guys, they never got thrown to as much. That Paul Krause record, I don't think that'll ever be broken by anybody. And I think he's the most underrated player in the history of the NFL for what he's done, but I think I think that Darrell Green was the best defensive back to ever play in the league. I think Deion is overrated compared to what Darrell Green was able to do. He played with the same team. He was short, but he was the fastest guy to ever play. And I think that these players of the old eras are underrated, especially the offensive linemen. I don't think there's any way these offensive linemen are as good as today. What do you think?
I couldn't disagree more, but I disagree with Warren on most things, so I'm not totally shocked, but no, I couldn't disagree more. I mean, it was a different era. The rules were different, and so it's really hard to compare. I mean, you go back, you can always pick guys out. You know, he picks Paul Krause. I think Forrest Gregg. You think about a great offensive lineman. Yeah, I'm just thinking offensive lineman right now because he's saying that they were better back then. They didn't face guys that were 6'5", 240, and ran a 4'4". I mean, you just can't compare. You can't say that the offensive linemen in the 60s were all better than the guys today. I just refuse to believe
that.
And the same thing with secondary. I mean, just no. I mean, yes, it was a great era back then. There were some great players, but they didn't face the kind of athletes that everybody faces today. There's so much more. A lot of those guys were playing baseball or playing different sports.
Well, they had to play different sports because they, you know, the money was different, as
correct,
you mentioned. Now,
exactly,
if they were able to just play football for, 14 games or 12 games during that time, and then have the rest of the off season to train and condition and not worry about, you know, the financial end,
yep,
all of a sudden now you might see a bigger and better athlete doing
absolutely.
That time.
It's a great point. It's a great point. Most of those players back in the 60s and 70s, mostly the 60s and even before, all had other jobs in the offseason to supplement what they were making in the NFL. That could change completely what kind of players they could be if they could train 12 months out of the year. Interesting topics. Glad we brought that up. But let's get back to the NFL Week 6. When we come back, we'll look at some of the great matchups on the schedule and weigh in on what we think we might see happen tomorrow when Week 6 kicks off in earnest. Much more in the Zone right after these.
You're in the Zone with Dave Sinekin and Trent Tucker on The Fan.
By New Roads.
You're listening to The Fan.
Kick-ass offense.
We're back 9:18 on a Saturday morning. You're in the Zone with Tucker and Sinekin, hanging out till the top of the hour. We will hand things off to Fantasy Football Weekly at 10 o'clock. Reminder: Gophers football tonight, 6:30, opening kickoff from TCF Bank Stadium. You'll hear it right here on the home of the Gophers, 100.3 FM. If you're looking for the Wild, just turn your dial to the right just a bit to Cool 108. Wild Nashville will be heard on Cool 108 tonight, as will Gopher Hockey against Colorado College on AM 1130, our old frequency, now known as KTLK, Gopher Hockey on AM 1130 tonight. Vikes-Eagles tomorrow at noon, pregame at 10 here on The Fan. We will also carry the Niners-Rams game on the Plus, 96.7 FM, KFAN Plus. We'll carry the primetime game on The Fan, Steelers-Chargers, and Monday night's game, Detroit at Green Bay, a game I will be attending Monday evening. I have gone an hour and 20 minutes and yet to crow at all about my team's performance in Dallas last week.
That's big of you.
That's rather impressive,
isn't
it?
That's big of you, yeah.
I would think most people would have expected that much earlier today.
Oh, yeah. When I came in, I thought I'd be right at the top of the show.
I'm a little concerned about Jamar at this point because we didn't hear from him last week. We would have thought a lot of trash talk heading into the game.
He's probably concerned about his team right now.
Yeah, I understand why we haven't heard from him today, I guess, a little bit. And the day's not over.
Well, he's still young.
Correct. I was, as you can imagine, very pleased with what transpired at the house that Jerry built for Aaron, who is now 4-0 in that building.
He has played well in Jerry's world.
It was 31-3 in the third quarter.
Yeah. Now, Cowboys make a run?
A little bit. I thought the defense got a little too relaxed. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
And Mike Pettine has said now he probably should have kept the pressure on Dak a little bit, knowing that they were going to throw. And again, he sort of hung back a little bit. But what concerned me were the injuries. Green Bay did lose a number of players in that game, and they're banged up heading into Monday night. But that was a win that I told you last week I was oddly confident. Remember that?
You did, yeah.
I was oddly confident. I'm oddly nervous about Monday night. We'll get to that. I think this is a difficult spot for the Pack coming off that big game. But putting that game, you know, just under the mirror under the microscope for a second, to see them run the football like that, to see Aaron Jones outperform Ezekiel Elliott, to score four times, let Rodgers be more of a complimentary piece, only four completions to wide receivers. That's not going to be a recipe that holds up over 16 games, but on this day, when the running game was going so well, it was really, really nice to watch. And the Cowboys have a lot of issues. They really do. And I think they were exposed a little bit last Sunday. And I think, you know, by virtue of the schedule, they go to the Jets. They do have to face Sam Darnold now, who's back wearing a spleen protector to make sure he doesn't injure that thing any worse, because that could be pretty dangerous. But they get a pretty easy opponent to try to bounce back, but that was a an important win for Green Bay after the loss to Philly. They had 10 days to get ready. I think that helped. But yeah, they lost. You know, Davante Adams did not play. He will not play again Monday. They lost their fine number one pick, Darnell Savage, the safety who's likely to miss tomorrow night with an ankle injury. They've got 18 players listed on the injury report from that game. So they got banged up pretty good, and they're going to need to heal and be ready for a Lions team. We're going to talk about that game a lot here before we are done. There are some fun games on the docket tomorrow, Mr. Tucker,
okay.
And some interesting games that I think will tell you a lot about teams. Let's look at, like, Seattle at Cleveland. The Browns have been such a disappointment. They had the one win against Baltimore that people thought, all right.
Okay, here they come.
But Baltimore has been really bad, and their defense looks nothing like the defense we've grown accustomed to seeing with Baltimore. So I don't know how big a win that was, but now they're home, and here comes Seattle, a team that is 4-1, but you know, Greg Zuerlein misses a, what, 44-yard field goal in Seattle that would have won that game for the Rams, and we would look at Seattle a whole lot differently if Zuerlein makes that field goal.
And also, you know, and the mismanagement on the Seattle offensive side,
yes,
to close the game out.
Absolutely.
You know, because you're thinking Russell Wilson, if he gets one first down, game is over. Game is over. Because now you force the Rams to use all of their timeouts.
Exactly.
You don't give them the ball back. You run the clock out. You know, but on that offensive possession, you know, Seattle, you know, a huge mismanagement to close that game out.
They got very fortunate.
Yeah.
No doubt. They got bailed out by Greg Zuerlein's errant leg, which is unusual. He's one of the best kickers in football. So here comes Seattle at 4-1 and feeling good about themselves. And Cleveland kind of feels like it's their season, right? I mean, they lay an egg on Monday Night Football. They look terrible against the 49ers.
How good are the 49ers?
Well, that's a good question. And we'll know a lot more about them tomorrow, I think, as they go to L.A. to play the Rams. And that's a Rams team that's dropped two straight, and they are clearly a much better team at home than they are on the road. But, again, they make that field goal, they're 4-1. And people are saying, all right, they're the Rams. They're the studs of this division. But, no, now they're 3-2, and the Niners are 4-0, and they came off their bye, and they mowed over the Browns. I mean, just ran them down. And now they go to a place where they've struggled. If they can go into the L.A. and get a win over the Rams, then they are going to look like the team in the NFC.
Well, that will send a strong message out west for sure. You know, if they can go into L.A. and get to 5-0, now you have to look at the 49ers differently.
Todd Gurley, unlikely to play. He is doubtful. That means Malcolm Brown gets the carries for the Rams. Brandon Cooks is questionable as well. So the Rams are dealing with some injuries, but so is San Fran. Niners will be without both starting tackles tomorrow. That was like the Cowboys were without Tyron Smith, and then Lyle Collins went out during the game with an injury, and that cripples your offensive line. We'll see how the Niners can handle things without their two fine tackles tomorrow. George Kittle, I heard, is banged up a little bit. I think he'll play, but they're dealing with injuries there. There's another injury. Oh, their fullback, Juszczyk, who's one of the top fullbacks in football, he's out for 4 to 6 weeks, and that's a big part of that offense in San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan's offense is the use of the fullback. He is out. The Rams have had success. I think they've beaten Kyle Shanahan 3 out of 4 times. I do like the Rams tomorrow to just sort of say, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, this division is not yours for the taking just yet, San Francisco. I'd be really surprised if the Niners, after a big win on a Monday night, a short week, without their two tackles and their fullback, and go into the L.A. and beat the Rams, that would really surprise me. I expect L.A. to stand up and win that game tomorrow.
All right.
I would be really surprised if they don't. Houston to Kansas City, another game I'm really interested in. The Chiefs, is that the most surprising game of the year? I'm sure there's a couple others that jump out, but Colts going into Kansas City as an 11-point underdog and winning that game. Obviously, Mahomes and his ankle were banged up in that game, and they're missing Tyreek Hill still, and they lost Sammy Watkins, and they've got injuries on their offensive line, and so they're banged up. But for the Colts to go in there and shut them down and hold them to, what, 13 points? Is that what it was, 10, 13 points? Now here comes KC a week later. Tyreek Hill may play. We'll listen to the Fantasy Boys, see what they say about that. Mahomes will play despite the ankle issues. And Houston, which has been up and down, Deshaun Watson had the game of his life last week. Again, Atlanta, again, that defense is horrible, but they threw 50 points on the board. Deshaun Watson was basically perfect, and he shouldn't face a ton of
pressure
because Chris Jones is out, the fine defensive lineman for the Chiefs. So this is a really interesting game because the Chiefs kind of need to get back to Chiefs football and score points. You can do that against Houston. That defense is not like it used to be. But can they stop Deshaun Watson and Houston, which with Will Fuller last week, they were like a pinball machine.
You know, he's a mobile quarterback. You know, he's throwing the ball much better. You know, but when the pocket breaks down, you know, he can use his speed and quickness to extend plays. And when he's in the open field, you know, he's dangerous.
I do like KC to I can't see them losing two straight at home. Can you?
No, I can't either.
I expect them to win that game. I think they win it by about a touchdown. I think they'll beat the spread on that one and handle their business. Didn't mention the Bears losing in London to Oakland last week.
No.
I mean, for Vikings fans, you watched Oakland here, what, 2 weeks ago, look completely inept, right? They were overmatched by the Vikings. And ever since then, they go into Indianapolis and beat the Colts, who look like a pretty good team, and they go to London and beat the Bears. And now they're on a bye, and then they play the Pack.
It's Chucky, baby. John Gruden.
They've really come on. Again, everybody's kind of ribbing me, God, the Packers play two more home games now? What, do they ever go on the road? Well, yeah, I mean, you're going to get eight. Now, the Packers happen to get, I think, five or six of theirs early.
They're kind of like the Badgers right now.
Kind of, yeah.
You're getting fed on their home field.
Right, but after Lions and Raiders, they go on the road for four out of five, including Kansas City, L.A., San Francisco. So they're gonna have to face some tough teams on the road. And again, scheduling quirks happen to everyone. The Packers' next two opponents are both coming off their byes. You know, so that's not really in the Packers' favor at all. The Lions have had 2 weeks to get ready. Now the Raiders will have 2 weeks to get ready. Again, you're at home and you should win those games, but the road teams do get that advantage of having 2 weeks to prepare for you. So Green Bay, a banged-up team, does have to deal with that just a bit,
okay.
Which does not play in their favor. Let's look at one other one before we get to Packers-Lions. Saints at Jaguars. The Jaguars are favored in this game by 2 points, which I think surprises a lot of people because Teddy looked really good last week.
Yeah.
Again, at home, and now they have to go on the road and face a Jacksonville team that's really hard to figure out.
Yeah.
But this is an interesting game because I think most people look at that and say, well, the Saints are so much better than Jacksonville. But the Jaguars can run the football with Leonard Fournette. Gardner Minshew is like a thing now. He's like the hot, exciting new quarterback that nobody saw coming. And they're back home against a Saints team that typically doesn't travel well, though they went to Seattle and beat the Seahawks. So interesting game for Teddy, who's starting to build up a nice little resume now as a starter in Drew Brees' place.
Well, you know, when you're able to get, you know, that consistent play, you know, you get the consistent reps, you know, all of a sudden your game begins to grow. You become more confident. You have a better feel with your teammates. You understand, you know, what the game plan is all about. You know what plays to call, you know, in certain situations to allow the offense to continue to move forward. And the longer he stays out there and builds that rapport with his teammates, the better he will become.
He will have a tough time tomorrow because it looks like Alvin Kamara will miss that game. The best offensive weapon that team has is dealing with an injury. It looks like Latavius Murray going to get the carries for the Saints tomorrow in Jacksonville, in a tough spot for the Saints, I think.
Who are you taking?
I like Jacksonville.
Really?
Yep. They're going to be one of my three picks.
I'm taking the Saints.
Teasing my picks for the last segment. Yeah, I like the Jaguars to beat the Saints.
Okay. You know, like I said, you go to Seattle, you know, it wasn't one of Teddy's best performances, but now he, you know, seems like after a few weeks here or there, you know, becoming more comfortable with how Sean Payton wants him to run the offense.
For sure.
We all know that he's a very good football player at that position. And as I mentioned, you know, the longer he stays out there with his teammates and the more comfortable they become with one another, you know, this team will continue to move in the right direction.
We'll just see how comfortable he is when Alvin Kamara is in street clothes, because that's a key player to have on the field.
The next man up.
Well, granted, but it's easy to say that. Kamara is one of the top running backs in football.
I get that. Yeah.
It'll be a little tougher for Teddy tomorrow, I think. We'll come back. I'll give my three picks against the spread. We'll, look at Vikings, Eagles, Packers, Lions, and also the Gophers-Nebraska game tonight. Lots to come. Final segment in the zone right after these.
You're in the zone on The Fan.
The Fan.
Is gonna pick a fight.
Blues don't care. Blues don't care.
We are back. 9:37, final segment of this edition of In the Zone on a snowy Saturday morning here in the Twin Cities on October 12th.
I have a question for you. Yes. I know we're into the football mode.
Yes.
But I'm just going to ask you before you get back into your, you know, back into your...
My comfort zone?
Yeah. Are you concerned about the Wolves this year in terms of them maybe not making the playoffs once again?
Well, I don't expect them to make the playoffs.
Okay.
I don't. My expectations are tempered. I think the organization's moving in the right direction. I think they have some smart people running the organization. They're trying to change things, but it's not going to be a quick fix. I mean, they've got contracts that they're, you know, hung with that they've got to deal with. And I think I'm more confident about the direction of this organization today than I was a year ago. I'll have my season tickets. I'll still go to my 10 games, but I don't have expectations of the postseason.
Okay.
Be a nice surprise.
I was asking, yeah.
Yeah. But I want to see this new style of offense. I want to see if they are going to play defense. I want to see if Covington fits, you know, playing a lot of four, which is not where he's used to playing. He's a wing defender, and they're not asking him to defend wings. That scares me a little bit. I'm excited to watch Jared Culver. I think the new guys, you know, Jake Layman looks like he's going to be a nice fit. Noah Vonla is a Hoosier, so I'm hoping that he can fit in. But no, I don't have any delusions in the stacked Western Conference that the Wolves are going to be in the playoffs. Could happen. I'd be thrilled. But I'm going in with lower expectations. What's 15 years out of 16 if you've already dealt with 14 or 15? So we're going to talk about Vikes-Eagles, little Packers-Lions. We did chat a little bit about what went down in the house that Jerry built for Aaron last segment. And lo and behold, after a week where he didn't call to trash talk ahead of the game, he's a stand-up guy, Jamar from Brooklyn Park, and he's here to take his medicine. Because, Jamar, I got four words for you. How about them Cowboys? How we doing, my friend?
I'm absolutely great. Let me say this. I don't know how the heck I forgot zonking out to call last week prior to the game. I don't know how I did that, so please excuse my absence of tardiness. Let me say this. I wanted to see a full game where the defense did something, put together a game. I've seen that in New Orleans, and then I thought the same thing would carry over into the game against Aaron Rodgers, although we know Aaron Rodgers is way craftier than Bridgewater. So first part of the game, I just thought it was over. I thought Aaron Rodgers was going to have his way. But then I seen that defense deciding that we weren't going to let this happen in our house. I seen the defense put a clamp up. I seen Aaron Rodgers not do anything. I seen Aaron Rodgers not put up points in the second half, put up any touchdowns in the second half. We needed one more quarter to beat Aaron Rodgers. Of course, every team does, right? Every team needs about five quarters.
Yeah, you get 60 minutes. That's all you get. Yep.
That's true. Unfortunate. But again, I believe that when we see you in the playoffs, in your house, it will be a different result. We just didn't have enough. The defense let me down, let the whole team down. Until the end of the game when it was too late, Davey.
Yeah, I mean, look, when it's 31-3, the playbook changes a bit. So to say that you held us down and you started to score, you know, when a team's up four touchdowns, they play differently. So I'm going to throw that comment out because had it been a three-point game, everything would have looked different. I think the fact that our running back stole the show on your turf was the story of this game, that you could not contain Aaron Jones, and he threw four touchdowns on the board. No one's ever scored four touchdowns against the Dallas Cowboys. He got to wave bye-bye to Byron Jones on his way in. That cost him $10,000, by the way. But the fact that you guys could not contain the run was the difference in this game. And then the Packers did a pretty good job on Zeke, did not give up the big runs. That pass play to Zeke was probably the biggest play that they gave up to number 22. So I think your team needs to sort of take a step back and consider what your ceiling is, because I don't see you were missing some talent. You were missing your left tackle. Your right tackle dropped out. But defensively, that team is going to take some lumps. And again, I don't think they'll be tested this week. But I mean, I'm curious to see when they play Philly how those games turn out, because I think Philly's more talented up and down the board.
Of course you do, but the truth of the matter is,
well, they beat the Packers and Dallas didn't, so there you go.
But here's the difference. This is a team this is a defense that knows how embarrassing it was. I mean, I told you.
Oh, good. I'm glad they know it.
When we played Miami, I told you that this was a defense that let Miami hang around. This is not the same run stopping defense as last year that only allowed two 100-yard rushes. passing, you're not, that's what you're not going to do, is we don't have a lot of passing touchdowns scored against us. So the defense has to stop being Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and play a full game and has to match the offense. The offense has been our is what's been carrying us this year. So, again, in the playoffs, I believe that because we're going to get better as it goes. We're going to get much healthier. We had a problem in the secondary, well, a problem on the offensive line. We are going to get healthier. I'm not using that as an excuse. You guys beat our butt for 3.5 quarters, at least 2.5, and then we just didn't have enough time. I believe, which I know, in the playoffs, especially on the road. Now, Dakota is better on the road. On the road, we will beat you in the playoffs.
Okay.
So what Jamar is saying is that, you know, we didn't lose a game. We just ran out of time.
Yeah, apparently so.
We just ran out of time.
We got down 4 touchdowns and we ran out of time. Jamar, I'll leave you with this. I tweeted this out last Sunday. It was awfully nice of your owner to build Aaron a vacation home in Texas. It really was. That's you can say what you want about Jerry Jones. That was classy. Thanks,
yes,
Jamar.
He is classy. That's right. Thank you, Aaron Rodgers.
Take it easy. Jamar, our favorite Cowboy fan. Rodgers 4-0 in that stadium. A Super Bowl and then 3 wins against the Cowboys. It's kind of fun. All right. Let's close here. Let's look at the two games again. Starting with Vikings-Eagles. I think it's the best game on the docket tomorrow. I'm really curious to see what Philly can do against your club, the Vikings, in their house. I like the Vikings in this game. I think you can throw on Philly. It all comes down to protecting Kirk Cousins. He's always more comfortable at home. He'll have that crowd behind him. And I think the Vikings offensive line does enough. A lot of quick passes over the middle. Maybe the tight ends get more involved. I think Dalvin Cook is a big feature in the running game with that overly aggressive front that that Philly throws at you. But I think the Eagles, coming off a game where they had 10 sacks against the Jets, everyone's talking about this defense with Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox and all these talented players up front. It's tough to do that here in the Vikings' house, and I think the Vikings are going to make a statement tomorrow and take care of Philly. I think it's going to be a tough game. I don't think Dalvin's going to run wild. It's hard to run against this Eagles team, but I think that the passing game makes just enough plays that the Vikings win something like, 24-17. I don't think it's a real high-scoring game, but I would be surprised if Philly came in and beat the Vikes tomorrow.
I'm taking the Vikes for sure, you know, but it started once again for me on the defensive end. You know, Carson Wentz is playing some good football as of late. You know, he may not have a few of his receivers or some of his skilled players with him, but we've seen the Eagles when other guys have to step up. You know, they have been able to step into those positions and play some big-time football. So once again, for the Vikings, defensively, they have to get off to a good start to make sure that Carson Wentz doesn't find that early confidence.
Yeah, for sure. You got to make him uncomfortable. Make sure you got Zach Ertz in your crosshairs. No DeSean Jackson. No Darren Sproles. Alshon Jeffrey's not 100%. Nelson Aguilar is terrible. That Eagles passing attack can be beaten. I mean, you can beat them. And Mike Hughes looks like he's ready now to sort of maybe become that number one corner. Maybe not now, but he's on that track, I think, with Xavier kind of fading a little bit. Having him healthy makes a big difference. Alexander healthy makes a big difference. And obviously having the hitman on the back end to make sure nobody gets, you know, over the top helps as well. I just feels like this is a game the Vikes win. When they go to Detroit next week, I may not be as confident in your favorite team, but I think in this spot, it's a good spot for the Vikes. They got their confidence back last week. Now they can beat a good team and put some of the whispers aside for a while, till the schedule gets tougher and you got to beat good teams on the road. That'll be the next step. Beat a good team at home, great. Now go on the road and beat a good team.
Well, I mean, you know, anytime you can win a football game at this level, it's going to build your confidence. And whether Vikings believe they, with the talent, you know, they're trying to get to at the end of the season, they know it's going to be tough. So, you know, getting prepared during the regular season, facing some good football teams, will give you an indication on where you stand as a team and to see if you can put yourself in a situation to make a playoff run. And I believe the Vikings have the talent, you know, to get themselves into a playoff position and to make a run this year, you know, but it all starts once again with their defense.
Yep, and then after that, the confidence of the quarterback.
You know, yeah.
To know that he feels like he can lead this team. He said he has to be that guy that, you know, you like that, you know, that whole tough guy that persona, he needs to be more like that. Well, that's not just something you turn on.
No, that's not him.
Either you have it or you don't. He's too nice a guy.
He just has to be consistent.
Yeah.
You know, he just has to throw the football to the right place.
Packers-Lions Monday night. I'm a little worried. I know it's ridiculous because you look at the history of Packers-Lions, it's so one-sided, but the Lions have won the last four.
So you're not oddly confident.
I'm not oddly confident. I'm oddly nervous. The Lions have won the last four in this series. Now, Rodgers hasn't played in all those games, and last year, week 17, I think it was 31-0.
On your home field? Yeah, I'm taking the Packers.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Packers are going to win. It's a four-point spread. I think it's going to be really close. I'll be at the game. That's another knock against my team because we rarely win when I go.
Any closer than four, you're saying?
Yeah, I think it's closer than four. I do. I think
it's what?
I haven't.
24-21?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I think it'll be a little higher scoring, maybe like
17-14?
28-27, you know, 28-26. The Lions have played this team well the last couple of years, and Green Bay knows that. They've circled this game. They've had 2 weeks to get ready, so Hockenson is back from his concussion. Darius Slay is back from his injury. They are a healthy team. Packers, no Davante Adams, no Darnell Savage. There's a number of players, no Tony Brown, number of players that are going to miss this game. A lot of guys, even Rodgers popped up with a knee on the injury report this week. They've got 18 guys on their injury report, and I've seen too many games at Lambeau where everybody expects Green Bay to roll, and they've come up a little flat. And so this is a huge game because, now they're 4-1, and you get Detroit and Oakland now at home, both coming off byes before you hit the road for 4 out of 5 at Kansas City, at the Chargers, at the 49ers. And I forget the fourth game in that mix. I think it's the Giants. So you get one. Looks like easier one, but
well,
by
the
then,
Giants may be better by then.
Well, Barkley will be back, yeah. So they'll be better, and their quarterback will have played more games. But you've already lost a home game, so you have to take care of the home field on Monday night, and I expect Green Bay to win this game.
It's a division game.
Right. You can't lose a home division game, and then the Bears have already suffered that fate, and that's why they're behind the eight ball in this division. It's the first division game for the Lions this year. They've been better than advertised, but it's been a weird season, right? They tie Arizona after giving up a big lead in the opener and forced to settle with a tie. The Chargers are on the one-yard line about to win the game, and Austin Ekeler fumbles, and the Lions win. They go to Philly and win that game, and the story of the game is a kickoff return touchdown for the Lions and about 18 drops by Eagles receivers that cost them that game late. But give them credit. They went into Philly and won a football game, and then they go play Kansas City at home, and they had the lead in the final few minutes before Mahomes leads them down the field to win the game. So Detroit's been an improved team. That defense is better. They still don't rush the passer a lot. They don't turn the ball over a lot. But they can run the football. Kerryon Johnson's going to be a big factor for Green Bay's defense to deal with. And Matthew Stafford has played well of late against Green Bay. His overall record against Green Bay is terrible. But of late, he's played well. And Marvin Jones just destroys the Packers as well. So I think it's a really, really close game. I think my team edges and wins it, but I'm very nervous about this.
Well, you know, and with the conditions, we don't know what they will be tomorrow.
It'll be cold. I don't think it'll be snow or anything.
Well, if you look at the two quarterbacks, you know, Matthew Stafford plays his home games inside of a dome.
Yep.
Very comfortable position. And if you look at where Aaron Rodgers, you know, does his best work at, is outside in the cold. So I would have to favor Aaron Rodgers in the conditions tomorrow. So I would take the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, I hope a receiver steps up because without Davante Adams, nobody really stepped up last week. The running game worked so well, it wasn't a big factor, but someone's going to have to step up in the passing game tomorrow night. All right, here are my three games against the spread, Trent. I'm 9-6 for the season now, 60% clip.
That's three games above 500?
I went 3-0 last week. I was tempted to put the Lions in. I'm not going to do it out of respect for my club. But there's your little bonus play. Okay. My three picks against the spread this week. I like the Rams laying 3 points against the 49ers.
Okay.
I like Jacksonville at home laying 2 points against the Saints.
Okay.
And I've gone back and forth on this one. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. I think they got humbled last Sunday night, and They got humbled in prime time. They're laying 4 points against the Texans, and I think they can win that game by a touchdown. So Kansas City, the Rams, and the Jaguars, three home teams, one underdog. No, I guess they're all favorites. They're all small favorites, which is unlike. I'm usually a dog guy. Those are my three picks for this week. Final few minutes. Let's wrap it up with the Gophers against Nebraska tonight. Trent, your alma mater, your unbeaten Gophers, one of 16 unbeatens. I think a win tonight puts them in the top 25. I think they finally get national respect. Not like Nebraska is all that, but that's a good program.
Okay.
Take care of business in prime time at home, and I think, what would they be? Are they 5-0 right now?
Yeah.
So they'd be 6-0, with Rutgers and Maryland the next 2 weeks, two very winnable games. Mm-hmm. This might be the toughest, but obviously the key storyline here, the health of quarterback Adrian Martinez and Eden Prairie's own J.D. Spielman. Both those guys are questionable, as Scott Frost should. He has played his cards close to his vest. We have no idea. At least I've seen nothing that has shown me the availability of either of those players. Martinez injured his knee late in the game last week and I think has practiced in a limited fashion, but that changes everything. If those two guys are not out, are not playing, I don't see how the Gophers lose to Nebraska. If they're playing, I don't know. I think it's a tight four-quarter game. I think you rely on those two running backs that had big weeks last week, right? Smith and Brooks both cracked 100 yards against Illinois. If it's cold and snowy and windy, you can't rely on the passing game. The fan has learned you need to run the football. I think the Gophers are better prepared to run the football than Nebraska. Can you stop the run, though? Can you, you know, put Nebraska into third and long situations and force them to, you know, throw the football? That's going to be something to watch. I would assume your Gophers, as 7.5-point favorites, take care of business with or without Adrian Martinez.
And we get to 6-0?
I think you get to 6-0.
Okay.
With Rutgers
Nation.
And we know the Rutgers game next week is a an afternoon game, so we will be
once
here.
Once again, huh?
No 11 a.m. kickoffs yet for the Gophers.
So the Big Ten has given the Gophers a lot of love this year.
We love that because it means we're not preempted by early Gopher football. Now, 2 weeks from now when they play Maryland, that's still, I think they'll announce that Monday. That one
is a home game, or is that in College Park? Are they still calling it College Park?
Let's go with it.
Okay.
I don't know for sure. Isn't what's Penn State? Is that State College?
State College.
Yeah, that could be College Park. Yeah, that sounds about right. So enjoy your Gopher game tonight. I know you'll be watching.
I will.
We'll talk much more NBA next week as we get closer to the season and look ahead to Week 7 in the National Football League as the Vikes get set to head to Detroit, take out a Lions team that hopefully will be battered and bruised after a loss to Green Bay. Have a great week, Double T.
The same, Davey.
For Trent, I'm Dave. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Fantasy Football Weekly. Until then, Trent and I are back next Saturday at 8 o'clock. Have a great week, everybody. Peace out. One of these days, things gonna change.